Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live from our studios at Meat House Fork. With me today, Heath Elson-San. And I know last week, listen, and you probably missed it, but I'm recovering from COVID, was in the hospital, and that's why I couldn't get it right. So if you missed, we're wondering what was being said as the music was playing simultaneously, it was me explaining why we haven't been around for the last few weeks. And you see, now I got a big old excuse. I think I'm going to use that excuse for the rest of the season. Anything I do wrong, it's COVID related.
Everything's so. COVID related anyway.
Everything's COVID related. The Saints, listen, personally, I get the whole mystique of the of New England and Bill Belichick and playing in New England. This ain't the same New England team. No. Having said that, this is a good defensive team. Going in, New England's a good defensive team. And you got to look at it the same way as you look at Sean Payton. Sean Payton is taking a reclamation project in Jameis Winston, putting him on the field with a good defense and, you know, a solid offensive line, not a lot of playmakers. So while you could say, well, they don't have, I still have a hard time realizing this is not last year's Saints or the year before.
Right.
This is a whole new Saints team. But yet my mind still tells me like, oh, we should take care of a team like that. That's got a rookie quarterback and, you know, they got a good defense. But, and then I say to myself, once I realize, I mean, what's the difference between us and them now? And so if you want to start patting Bill Belichick, which obviously every talking head did, every article was just about how amazing he is. And now, listen, they gave Sean Payton his due too. Right. But at the same time, with two teams with similar situations, I think the Saints were the obvious better team on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, yes, we are, you know, the reclamation project with Jameis Winston, but that is still against a rookie quarterback making his third start. You know, as far as the red, I mean, there's been a big change. It wasn't just Tom Brady isn't the only thing missing from that team, right? The Patriots have had a pretty big turnover the last few couple of years of personnel. And you're right, they're not the same team across the board. You know, and then they lost White early on, who's, you know,
yeah,
probably the biggest playmaker that they have. And that, you know, and so they don't, they're just not the same team. And but what I will say is that the Saints did what they should do, what a good defensive team does, and they made him look like a rookie playing his third game.
No, and that's the key. You have a good defense. And now here's the thing I'm going to add to that while we're talking about the Saints defense. I just got finished saying sometimes I have to remind myself these are not the same teams. It's not the Drew Brees team. And what I mean by that is even looking at a team like the other day, who was it? Maybe it was Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's down. They had Sherman come in for a visit. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, man, we're gonna tear up Tampa Bay with that defense we have. And they got a poor pass defense. And then I had to stop and say, boy, a team that has a strong front and a weak pass defense, that's a team that Drew Brees would eat up. Right. And this is not that, that's not this team anymore. And so now you have to look at these teams that like, okay, I don't know if we yet have the team because I think it's a long season and things will probably change. I don't know how to define it. Will change, will probably change, might change, should change. I don't know how to define it, but maybe the expectation is listen, you can get upset at Jameis Winston for the low yardage or lack of receivers or however you, but as the season progresses, I think Sean Payton should get more confidence. Jameis Winston should get some more confidence. We should get some good players back like Smith. And I know some people already booing that comment, Michael Thomas will be back. And all of a sudden, you could see the Saints start throwing the ball a little bit more efficiently and more effectively. I'm just not sure when we'll get to the point where we look at a team that's down their starter and, you know, another guy in the secondary and say, oh, yeah, this, now we can take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not there yet as far as the passing game is concerned, obviously. But it's also about the line too, right? We got some jumbling in the line. And I've seen, you know, I'm not sure. I guess we'll get into this at some point. You want to talk about Ramczyk, because that's probably the most concerning part of the whole thing to me. I would expect some, drop off, I guess, if you want to say, losing McCoy and moving Ruiz over and bringing in Throckmorton and all this different stuff. What I can't explain is what's going on the outs on the right side with Ramczyk, you know. and then now, you know, Armstead, if he's going to miss any time with the elbow thing. So we haven't had the line, you know, and they've had up and down, right? Obviously played really great, even despite the fact that McCoy got hurt. Ruiz came in. They didn't look like they missed a beat against Green Bay. Going to Carolina, they couldn't do anything right. They couldn't run block. They couldn't pass block. They couldn't do anything. And you go into this game, and it's like, well, we ran the ball again, but we did have protection issues in the pass again. You know, it was kind of a mixed bag between the two games there this time. And so that's going to be important going forward as well, because we can see that Jameis Winston has to be given the time to be efficient and not potentially make the big mistake, which I'm still going to insist, no matter what he says the reasons for are, he's showing a little bit too much of a propensity to me to revert to the old Jameis Winston and do something dumb at the wrong time.
Well, I keep going back and forth. At one time, I see these plays, and it's two or three of them a game where it's just like, just throw it away. Just throw it away. Just, right. You know, quit waiting until the last second a guy's hanging on you and you're throwing the ball and you're hitting people in the back of the head, or you're throwing it with your left hand. And so far, not much of it has come back to bite us.
Right.
But eventually it will. And what I don't want it to have happen is when it bites you during an important game or important drive that you need. You know, I look back at last year's Green Bay game when Taysom Hill fumbled, when we had all the momentum, right? Later in the game. And I just don't want that to happen. Your defense is playing good. You're playing a tough team that is going to be hard to beat anyway. And then all of a sudden a guy grabs you by the ankle, instead of just going down, you toss one up for grabs. But apparently what Jameis Winston has on his side is God.
Is on a mission from God, huh?
Is on a mission from God. Jameis Winston said he put that one in God's hands. Now,
yeah, he put it in God's hands. All right.
Yeah. And then on the sideline, Peyton was obviously,
yeah, just see the look on his
upset
face.
And I'm wondering if he told Winston, well, I had a talk with God too, and he said, yeah, if you do some bullshit like that again, we're gonna sit your ass right here on the bench.
No, son, I'm God, and I definitely didn't have that in my plan.
Yes, that was not my plan, and on this team, I'm God.
Yeah, so Peyton's look said everything, you know.
Yeah, listen, there's been a lot of argument, debate, whether he did that on purpose, whether he was, you know, he said, and I got to tell you something too. He came out in the interview, and usually he's that kind of goofy, kind of, you know, happy go lucky guy. Yeah. And he seemed very matter of fact when he was in his post game presser. But the thing that struck me is there was no blaming anybody else. There was no, you know, listen, I got some pressure and, you know, I tried to throw it away and I couldn't get enough on it. He said, you know, I was trying to throw it out of bounds.
Yeah.
They asked him flat point blank, because if you recall, there was a flag on the play. So even if they would have intercepted, we had gotten it back. They said, did you know it was a flag? And he's like, no.
Right.
And I mean, the guy, for all the stuff that we've heard bad about him, the one thing that I have completely come around on is the fact that he is a team player. This is a guy that would, I'm going to use some stupid analogy. He would take the gun charge because he doesn't have any other felonies. You know what I'm talking about? Right, the buddy that takes the gun. If I get caught with my gun, I'm going to jail, but you won't, because you don't have, he's like, he just, there is no, well, the other guys just didn't get open or, you know, whatever. And he's just pretty honest about how it all went down and why it went down. And I was impressed with that. What I wasn't impressed with, though, is, I mean, that's a situation where Peyton says, if you throw it away, throw it away.
Right.
And there's go ahead.
No, go ahead. The thing about that play is that, you know, yes, okay, maybe he was trying to throw it in the back of the end zone, but it's a bad time to do it when you're already 45-degree angle to the ground as you're going down. And you try to throw that, and you whether you're going to be able to get enough on that, you should have thrown it away already at that point.
Right.
Or you just take the tackle, and you were still in position to kick a field goal anyway. It's not like it was going to take you out of field goal range or it, you know.
Right. There'd be a better argument if they were on the 30 and he's getting sacked back exactly, to the 38.
You know, yeah. And he's got to be aware of those situations and say, yeah, this is not really what I wanted, but I should just eat it right here and we'll live to fight another play. And instead of throwing that ball, because the truth is Callaway made a great play. And so did Juwan Johnson 2 weeks ago, because he could tell me whatever you want about that. That was another one of those throws that
I think those are two different ones, because while there was a guy hanging on him, he throws it up, he throws it with authority, and he throws it high where Juwan gets it. This one, he was literally, I don't know what angle we want to call it, but he was down.
Was definitely on an angle.
Yeah, I took a screenshot of
it. But the thing about it was, is there was a defender right there with Callaway, right? And so if Callaway could have got to it, just a little bit different of a situation in that play, the other guy could have got to it too. Is the
100%.
Point,
100%. Know?
And that goes back to the point about in that situation, you're probably going to have a hard time getting enough arm on it to guarantee you get it out of bounds. So don't make that play in it. Now, that said, this seems to be an epidemic in the NFL right now. Patrick Mahomes threw a backwards pass yesterday that should have been caught, got intercepted. We've seen guys making throws and things.
Hell, let me give you some research here, at least some observations. So you're talking about Patrick Mahomes. There was also one when Garoppolo, the 49ers versus the Rams. Yeah. He throws a ball, and I don't know what he started to kind of throw it and kind of spun sideways and then ended up throwing it backwards.
Yeah.
And then it ended up being a big play for the 49ers. Then last night I'm watching Dak Prescott. I'm watching him throw in the end zone. He goes to throw the ball. It comes out of his hand. That old okey-doke where the ball, your hand goes forward, the ball stays back there. No one hit it. Now, right. He was under pressure, don't get me wrong, but that I made that comment. Isn't that what all this is about? Guys look pretty damn good on the professional level when nobody's harassing them. Right. You get some pressure, and all of a sudden, balls seem to – why'd that slip out of my hand? Then later on, Dak Prescott fumbles in trying to get in the end zone. My point is that I started to say, Heath, that I go back and forth. I see Winston, I start saying, golly. Now, in the preseason, I'm like – he is not Drew Brees. We can't expect him to be. But in the back of your mind, you've watched Drew Brees operate for so long that the expectation is that kind of stuff. Not that Drew didn't do it sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't do it a lot. And so now all of a sudden, I keep going back and forth. Jameis, I'm starting to lose a little confidence because he does some things that just, boy, that's going to come back and bite you later. Then you watch the other games in NFL and I reel myself in. Is Garoppolo a great quarterback? No, but he's a solid, good NFL starting quarterback. You know, Dak Prescott's supposed to be one of the top quarterbacks in the league, got paid like it. And these guys are making the same stupid mistake. But yet everything, because of the narrative, the media narrative has become the fans' narrative. And Jameis Winston's a turnover machine, and that could never change. And he is what he is. When in actuality, that was 1 year that was different than all the rest. It was that outlier. But yet he has to live with that.
Yeah, and that's the danger now with judging Winston is that, you know, he's under this microscope and you're kind of comparing him against an almost unfair criteria. And like we said, there's other guys doing it. You know, look, all of these quarterbacks in the league, including Drew Brees, and we talk every once in a while, once or twice a year, Drew Brees would make a play in a game. You go, who was that wearing number nine? Like, the guy just did something so dumb that you just don't ever see that, right? And so it happens. But then there's also a lot of plays that quarterbacks make that everybody, including the coaches, going, no, yes. You know, when it works out, right?
Right.
And so if you're going to throw for 3,000 or hell now, 4 and 5,000, you know, 3,000 used to be a benchmark.
Right.
5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns a season, you're going to make some throws that people were going to be going, oh, my God, no, oh, yeah, you know. In other words, you got to take risks. You know, you're going to put the ball into some places that, you know, why did he throw it there or whatever? And it works. And so when you're looking at Jameis Winston, because of the narrative and all, you start looking at these same plays that another guy would have made and everybody would have, nobody would really say anything about it.
They've just been, we got lucky on that one, but I'll take it.
And now instantly he's reverting back to the old Jameis Winston. In fact, they're even using Jameis Winston's name now, what was the word I'm looking for? I was watching some commentary on that Mahomes play, all right, in the Kansas City game. And they're talking about, you know, Kansas City's 1-2, who would have thought, and, you know, blah, 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 they don't look so good right now. And the guy literally says the way Mahomes has played recently, he looks more like 2019 Jameis Winston instead of 2019 Patrick Mahomes. And I'm like, they're actually using Jameis Winston now talking about other guys as like the benchmark of what a good and a bad quarterback looks like and all. It's like, look, man, there were a whole lot worse quarterbacks in the league in 2019 than Jameis Winston when he threw for that 30 interceptions, right? He also threw 30 touchdowns and 5,000
yards. 33 touchdowns. That's always lost.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're literally getting to the point now where we're making him the benchmark for what a quarterback needs to look like when they make a stupid decision or whatever. Like no other quarterbacks ever made a stupid decision in the history of the league. Right. And so you're right that he's under a microscope right now. And so if it wouldn't be for that commentary in the year he had 2 years ago in Tampa, I probably wouldn't have even been that critical of the throw he made that Callaway caught out of. Went, sometimes those work out and sometimes they don't.
Right. It's just is what it is. But now you're talking about a guy, 8 touchdowns, 9 if you know, with a rushing touchdown and 2 turnovers.
Right.
And I'll take that all day long. And if you,
when those 2 turnovers were in that Carolina game where everything was a turnover.
I mean, obviously, we talked about that last week. I pretty much wrote that entire game off. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have some silly plays, but if you put a quarterback under 68% pressure on every drop back, things are going to go wrong. Right. And at some point you just get to the point where you're like, and he said it last year during the Raiders game. It was an interview in the offseason. He talked to Drew Brees and he said, at what point, I mean, you got to take these risks or whatever.
Right.
And I'm paraphrasing all this. And Breeze was like, you know, it doesn't do any good for me to go out there and try to do things that I'm incapable of just for the sake of saying, well, I'm trying really hard. And I think that's something that a young quarterback needs to learn. Right. And hopefully that sinks in. But I think that we've all done it. I mean, if you're playing basketball and you know, there's 4 minutes left and you're down by 30, you start pulling threes, man. I mean, it's just what it is. Right. And then all of a sudden your 3-point percentage, man, he was 6 for 28.
Right.
Oh, that's horrible. Well, yeah, but let's see what happens. Let's see what that percentage looks like when the game's much closer and think you're not under constant barrage of pressure. The point is that, like I said, I think that I kind of brought this subject up because I'm using myself as a person who I supported Jameis Winston from the preseason. I just simply look at it and said, I saw Taysom Hill and I saw a ceiling. I see Jameis Winston and I see a higher ceiling. Now I realize it comes with some luggage too, some baggage, but I think it's something. And I convinced myself that it's something that the team can work out, all the different positive things. But if it doesn't happen, I still don't think that Taysom Hill could do much better. I just don't.
No,
so
no.
If Winston can't do it, then I think we need to find another quarterback, not just say, well, let's go to Hill now. Now, obviously, this year we don't have an option, but if Winston is not good enough this year, then that means next year we're looking for a quarterback, not turning it over to Taysom Hill. That's just how I feel about it.
That's
so. So I look at Winston, and for a person that supported him, I still look at every one of his through a lens, and I'm a supporter. And everything he does that's not quite right, holds on the ball a little bit too long, I compare him to Drew Brees. I'm just like, not that I'm like literally like Drew Brees wouldn't have, but in my mind, like Saints, the guy who takes the snap from center and drops back to pass
right
for 15 years didn't do that all the time. Or, you know, it only happened rarely.
Yeah.
So you're not as good. And the fact of the matter is I say it and I say, oh, you can't compare him to Drew Brees. He's not Drew Brees. And then still, in my mind, am comparing him to Drew Brees. I mean, the guy's going to have a hard time winning. Then when you add to what you just said, that people in the media are like, oh, he just pulled a Winston. The guy can't win.
Right.
And now you hope that despite all that nonsense, that Sean Payton keeps doing what he's doing and creates that quarterback that will get it. And by the time Michael Thomas comes back, Smith comes back, our offensive line is healthy, and you get some seasoning, some games under your belt, get some confidence, find an identity, that all of a sudden we start seeing this different Jameis Winston, who still is going to do something boneheaded, because I think that, you know, he's a gunslinger and he's not Drew Brees. He's not that efficient and effective. He's going to make mistakes, but not so many that you can't still win. And yeah, that's what we're seeing now. Guy's made a few mistakes, but at the end of the day, the results are good. The results, yeah, you can't complain about.
Yeah.
Now that's obviously something that, and if you add to it, Heath, and I want to go a little bit more in depth in this. We've talked about how the Saints have been transitioning, and have, maybe we're slow to recognize because Drew Brees has been so great for so long that even last year we were waiting for, let's that old New Orleans Saints offense to come out, and it never did. I mean, I don't know about you, but to me, it's like, yeah, it's going to, and every once in a while, everything went our way. We might've scored 2 defensive touchdowns. We might've had 3 running touchdowns, but we scored 41 points. You're like, there it is. Now we're ready to roll. And the next week, it's right back to the conservative. The Saints have been planning and implementing this defensive strategy, drafting guys,
right?
Not picking up the skill players that we all wanted them to. Defensive linemen, linebackers, defensive backs. This is a defensive team now, period. So all the complaining that I'm doing about the offense and Jameis Winston, I don't know how. I do think we'll get better. How much, though? How much better? Meaning, even if we could throw the ball more, are we going to? Are we just going to rely? Because, listen, that defense is still banged up. It's outstanding right now.
Right.
We play, help me out here, the Giants and then Washington. Then we have a bye. Then we get Onyemata back. We might get Alexander back.
Yeah.
We might get Davenport back.
Yep.
You talking about 3 huge pieces this defense. And I don't know if the Saints are ever going to turn into the team they were with Drew Brees. This might be at least the type. Maybe you'll have 200 yards passing, but this is the type of offense we should expect all year.
Yeah, and you know what? If you go back to – we kind of lost sight of when we got into the 3-7-9 seasons and Drew Brees started throwing for 5,000 yards, mainly in desperation time and trying to catch up. And if you go back to the Super Bowl time, this was a defensive team that ran and had a short, efficient passing game with Drew Brees delivering the ball to the right spot all the time. Right. This wasn't a wide open chunk the ball way down the field every play. And, you know, the Saints ran, if I'm not mistaken, we had 2 runners that went over 1,000 yards that year, right?
In which year?
In the Super Bowl year in 2009. We were a running team.
I'll check my football thesaurus, but you asked me to go way back.
Yeah, we had.
But Galvin, no, but they were a running team. They were top. They were
running team, played good defense. But the thing with, and Drew Brees was the ultimate game manager type quarterback, that, you know, he wasn't throwing for 5,000 yards the year we won the Super Bowl. And so you can get a misconception when you look at a guy like Sean Payton, and in your mind, you're thinking because of him and Drew Brees, it's throw, 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 throw. You know, I think Sean Payton wants to have a team that has solid defense, a good running game, and an efficient short passing game that the quarterback doesn't need to do a whole lot and just manage the game and don't do anything stupid. Now, the difference between, you know, the question will come in is whether Jameis Winston can thrive in that kind of a system, because what that does call for, what Drew Brees gave you was he always recognized it before the play snap, knew exactly where to go, and could put the ball in the right spot for a guy that technically wasn't even open, right? How many throws did Drew Brees throw the guy open by putting it right in his gut in a spot where nobody else could possibly get the ball? And the ball was out before he even took a half a step back from the line. And I don't know that that's Jameis Winston's strength.
Right. No, and I agree with you.
Okay. And so that'll be the difference in the, okay, so we're running, we got the defense, but that short Michael Thomas on a 5-yard slant and Drew Brees sticking in his gut within a half a second, I don't know that it's ever going to look the same with Jameis Winston at quarterback. And that's not a knock on Jameis Winston. It's just that he's not Drew Brees. You know what I'm saying?
I tried my best, Heath. I tried my best to focus on this new defense that we have. And even my mind, I'm sitting here thinking of all kind of other things I was going to say. Like, you know, we don't appreciate that. Like, you have a short passing, just a Drew Brees that rips you apart. And how hard it is to find a guy that can also throw the ball downfield. Because the whole offseason, I thought to myself, golly, Kamara is going to destroy the league. If they're worried about and stretching the field and they're worried about, you know, covering the deep third of the field, Kamara is going to – but all of a sudden, it seems like we don't really do that anymore. Like, just dump it off to the guy. The field has to be, you know, wide open, stretch. Anyway, I'm making that point just to basically say I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to focus on this new, amazing defense that we have. And here we are, like, all roads lead back to the offense. And I don't know if it's because that's what we're used to or if, like, we all see the Achilles heel and we hope that gets better, or if it's just – you know, glory days, we sitting here remembering about the past. So,
they were talking about another quarterback, and this relates to Jameis Winston too. And this was actually, you know, they said, I can't remember. It was one of the young quarterbacks they were talking about. And they, you know, they said they were talking to his coach and said, you know, what is the difference? Like, what does he need to do to make the next step to get to that next level? And basically what it was is, you know, we got guys going deep on a regular basis and the team does have to defend. And you throw the ball underneath and take what the defense gave you, right? Take the easy throw if it's open. If you can get 10 yards right there, don't go. But the difference is when it's learning to take that shot when it's there and right. Not when it's not there. Not you just draw back and you decide you're throwing it anyway. And you just lay it out. When it's there, hitting that shot when it's there. And that's when you got something. You know, that's when you're doing it right. And it's the same thing with Jane. He has the ability. We're sending guys deep. Harris is going deep. Kenny Stills now is going deep. You know, I'm sure Callaway has the ability. They're not the only ones, but smartly early on, he's just taking easy throw. He's taking what they give you. You know, he was very efficient. First game is a perfect example. 5 touchdowns with 130 yards passing or whatever he had.
Right.
And so, but then he did hit a deep one to Harrison, you know, and so those shots will be there. And so it's a matter of him, he'll get more comfortable and we will see improvement as the season goes on, as they play together more as a unit. You know, they haven't, this is their third game now playing together with him behind center.
And let's not lose sight of it, especially at Green Bay. When we talk about how few throws and how few yards that he had, if you look at how the game went, we were running a ball all over him. So, you know, hey, everything's working perfect. Our brand new quarterback, who's only in his first start, has the opportunity to just hand the ball off and throw it when he's comfortable. Then you add to that, now we have a lead. So now we don't even need to throw the ball. You know, all of it just kind of worked perfectly. Now in week 2, you know, again, when all the coaches were out and, you know, just it was just a disaster. Right. Now, all of a sudden, offensive line's not blocking. He doesn't have any protection. So you just kind of throw that game out. This one was a little bit, in my opinion, indicative of what we'll see more often is because, look, we had some success, and I'm talking offensively, but New England played tough. And when you take into consideration that, oh, boy, I was going to say we had two defensive scores. We had two huge plays. One of them led to a touchdown, and I don't believe the other one got in the end zone, but it got us down in the red zone.
Yeah.
And then what goes through my mind is I'm like, none of my notes has the two misses by Ruas. Now, okay, one was a 53-yarder. It's not a gimme. The other one is a gimme. And, you know, we have a couple of guys eligible to come off the off the injured reserve this week, and one of them is Will Lutz.
Yeah.
The other one is Traquan Smith. So we might see opportunity for both. I personally, based on the things I've observed and read, I don't think Lutz will be coming off because didn't he have a groin tear?
Yeah, I don't think he'll be ready. He's eligible, but I don't think this timeline was only 3 weeks.
So I don't expect to see him back, which means I expect on Wednesday that we're going to see some kickers at practice trying out. So, I mean, I'm sorry. Because to me, the thing that bothered me the most about the kick that he missed short is he, in my opinion, when he swung his leg, it reminded me of when I choke on a golf course, man. You just like, I'm scared. Yeah. I'm right there. All I got to do. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, man, I'm going to win that money. All I got to do is chip this ball just somewhere close so I could two putt. And then you go to swing the club and you say, you slow your club head speed down. You're like, no, maybe, you know, yeah. And he just seemed like he just kind of swung his leg really slowly. And he drew. Yeah. And actually, when you look at where the ball went, he drug his leg through the ball, man. And it just floated out there. And I was like, oh Lord. I mean, the dude is like, he's terrified to kick the ball.
Yeah.
And so listen, it just shows it's time. You need to find somebody else. And they always say it, kickers, it's not about talent. It's all between the ears. You know, once they get the yips, you're like, uh-oh.
Yep.
Man,
yep.
Now we're in trouble. So, so anyway, let's move on a little bit and back to the defense and listen, don't somehow find a way to transition back to Jameis Winston whenever I start talking about. okay. So our starter, our all pro, all world linebacker from first week of preseason, the game against the Ravens, Zach Bond. Last week, it was really bad. Yeah. Bond essentially got benched and then he got put back in the game. And I think the team really wants him to be successful. Obviously, they invest draft capital in him. Yeah. And again, let's not act like his career's over.
No, no.
He showed some good stuff. He needs some more seasoning because Pete Werner, our second-round draft pick from Ohio State, is healthy.
Yeah.
He comes in the game his first week, 35 snaps. Bond, 7 snaps.
Yeah.
To me, I hope Bond keeps improving. And we have our middle linebacker and weak side linebacker of the future. I mean, DeMarro Davis also played amazing, but that you guy's can't
a
help
beast, at, man.
At 32 years old, how many more of those does he have in him?
Right.
And you hope that you don't have to invest anything else in him because you got your two guys already. But having said that, and I won't be able to, Ellis, he had a great game.
He did.
I
mean,
he had a pressure that caused the turnover. Now the thing about him is he's always injured. He was injured last year. I think the Saints really liked him last year.
Yeah,
he was always injured in college. And you want to talk about watch the Saints fans get so frustrated if he keeps playing well, because based on his history, he's another guy that you just can't count on him because of his injury history. And it's one thing to be like, oh, good special teamer. He comes in and plays a little bit and does all right. When you start getting the fans' heart because, oh, man, they counting on you because you are impact. You're a DeMarro Davis type. And then all of a sudden it's, oh, he's out with a pulled this or, you know, a strain that is going to get frustrating. But that seems to be his history. And listen, believe me, you know, look, I hope that he's all that's past him.
Yeah, that'd be great. But
I worry the better he is. I'm like, oh, my God, man, this guy here. I mean, he's just always injured. Now, we have a couple other guys like that. Teron Armstead's. Now I'm going back to offense. Should I do that? No. Yeah. Okay. Teron Armstead takes some friendly fire and Jones Jr. hits him in the elbow.
Yeah.
Who knows how long he'll be out, but now our offensive line, you got to help me here. When you think about our offensive line, you're like, man, but now our offensive line is Hurst, Pete Ruiz, Brock Morton. I thought he was a wrestler. and then, you know, obviously we have Ramchek on the right side.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that offensive line, what you think as a given, like we're going to win this game with good defense and a running game and offensive line, you know, it's not, but at least we could throw it to, you know, who we throw it to. But we have a quarterback that, you know, again, listen, I'm a Jameis supporter. I feel like I got to say that, but I'm talking more in terms when you had a Drew Brees, you're like, we'll overcome all that. We'll just still throw for 300 yards and run for 100. So things on offense need to start going in a more positive direction, because right now it's rough with the injuries and we need to get some guys back on that side of the ball. But back to the talking a little defense, Turner, who had a great game, Peyton Turner, last week in his rookie debut.
Right.
He had, let's see where we're at here. Turner had 32 snaps, but was completely invisible. I don't think he had anything on the stat sheet. And again, no, not saying the guy can't do it, but you know, after his first week, generally once they get some tape on you, teams know how to handle you a little bit better.
Yeah.
And listen, I did see him get doubled quite a bit, but then I got to say every left defensive end, or would that be right defensive end, is going to get doubled at some point or another because they're not over there for no reason. And it's like, man, let's give him some help. So, you know,
yeah,
to protect the backside.
Yeah, you know, that's true. You know, they're aware of him now. They saw what he did last week when they watched the film. And but the other thing is, you know, he's just getting started. He wasn't going to have that game every week anyway, right? What he did last week. And so that was never really going to happen. I know you had wanted to talk about this. You brought it up that, you know, without blitzing, we didn't really do a whole lot on a defensive line this week as far as getting pressure, which was a little bit surprising because we, you know, we had Passanot back. He did have a sack in this game. He's playing a lot on the inside though, which really wasn't unexpected. We kind of knew that that's probably where he was going to be making his living early, at least with Onyemata and all being out, he'd get mixed in the inside.
Can I throw this in there real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
What a find.
Yeah.
A guy that had all the physical tools, but just never put it together in Kansas City.
Yep.
Now I'm sitting here like, oh man, you know, like, that guy got to stay healthy. I mean, he seems like maybe the most consistent guy, at least, you know, I was going to say something, but I realized, okay, he was injured last week and missed last week's game, but he's been a difference maker on this team.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. He's been a pleasant surprise so far. And, but you know, there again, like you said, we got Onyemata and then hopefully Davenport to come back here, hopefully before too much longer. Well, we know Onyemata is going to be out for the 6 weeks or whatever it is, but hopefully Davenport doesn't stretch into longer. And then hopefully he can, you know, I swear, I hate to even go here with it because it's almost like, you know, dare I say that when he comes back this time, he's able to stay healthy again for the rest of the season.
Right.
Because quite frankly, he looked like he was making that jump, that turn in the corner. You know what I'm saying? It looked like he was finally, that was starting to show up. And then of course, you know, he had to go down hurt again, but hopefully that doesn't drag out too long. And, but man, defense, you know, like you said, that's the strength of this team right now.
I'm going to throw this in there, and y'all know everybody listens to the show. I'm a huge supporter of Davenport, but when I look back at the injuries, I feel like I have no statistics to back this up. When he has come back from injury, he's been less effective. And maybe it's because of what those injuries were. Like, in other words, I'm like, hey, Davenport's coming back, man. That's going to be a difference maker. And then nothing. Yeah. And then you start, you know, so my point is I'm a bit concerned that when he does come back that, okay, yeah, he might, let's say, come back in week eight. Let's just say he comes back in week eight. It might take him 3 or 4 weeks before he starts finding his groove again. Yeah. So hopefully if he doesn't get too injured, he wasn't too injured, and B, hopefully it doesn't affect him. Cause the one thing we learned about him is that his issues are mental. His issues are, you know, lack of confidence, these things that he talked about in the off season. And sometimes, you know, you go and you get injured. Now, hopefully he doesn't go and sulk about, oh man, I was ready to have a great season and I'm injured again.
Yeah.
And come back in a, and I hate to call it a depression, but the guy, you know, listen, I'm not just saying these things. These are things that he admitted to, that he, you know, he has, he, you know, emotional issues and needs to keep his emotions and under check. I don't, listen, I'm not an expert on that stuff. So I probably shouldn't go into too much more than that, other than just simply saying that he's not one of those strong-minded guys that just like comes back, you know, Ricky Jackson, who gets in a car wreck and breaks his face, and then 2 weeks later he comes back. So
yeah.
We just hope that it's not just the physical part, that hopefully there's no mental lingering issues about that. So, all right. So let's see. We talked about Winston and being efficient and effective, but let's talk about this this game-winning drive. Now, before I say, and I brought up Winston, who had a couple of big plays in that drive throwing the ball, converted a third down to Harris, who seems to be, golly, I'm going to get into this whole thing about receivers again. I keep talking and taking away from Callaway. I think Callaway is a good player. And now y'all know how I am. Until you prove it to me, especially undrafted. And then when I say prove it, you wouldn't be undrafted if you were some amazing player in college. So you didn't prove it in college either, else you would have got drafted. So the guy has proven that he has a skill set. I think the problem is that when that skill set is now your best receiver, then now you're fighting not only the best coverage guy on the other team, you're also fighting coverage that's designed to say, okay, well, who's their best receiver? You know, they're not just going to stay in a zone and be even because there's no really great receiver. They're still going to play defense and take guys away. I believe Callaway will be a much improved player when Smith returns, when Thomas returns, and all of a sudden he's not drawing that coverage. And I bet you that's when we'll see him break out more because the guy can play. Having said that, to me, the only effective receiver we have right now is Harris. And I believe that's simply because he just has the speed and elusiveness the other guys don't.
Yeah.
And so Harris got open on that out, and it seems like the two routes he runs, deep and an out route. And right. I've seen that before. What's the kid that came from Carolina? He was on the team 2 years ago. Speed guy, number 19. And again, that's all he did. He ran deep and he had an out route. Yeah. And what you do is when they scatter your speed, when they turn their hips, you break it out, and you can generally get yourself a nice little first down if that's what you get. And that's what Harris is doing for the Saints. But moving along about this, the point is when the Saints needed it, because they it's a double-edged sword. We can complain about the offense, but when you're playing as well as you are defensively and the other team shows no signs of life, is it really time to take your new quarterback and a beat up offensive line that you probably lose a little confidence in last week after Carolina, regardless of why? You're just a little bit nervous and let's just throw the ball over the yard. No, your defense is handling them. But when we needed it, when it started getting a little close, the Saints did put together a 13 play, 75 yard drive for a touchdown. And Harris was a big part of it. Winston was a big part of it. And who else? Oh, Taysom Hill. I know that's one of your favorite guys and you love when they run that play. Talk a little bit about how it's usually the fifth or sixth, maybe even seventh time after running the exact same play that then you're going to find some success.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's what it is. It, you know, that's why the saying has always been seventh time the charm. And, you know, it's great when that happens though, isn't it? I generally speaking, I like offense and I like that in anything. That's why I don't watch soccer, right? I don't want to spend 90 minutes watching guys run around and have to decide it on a shootout at the end because they couldn't score a point. And so, but I have to say one of my favorite things in football is when you get towards the end of a game like that, the other team does a little something, you go, okay, this could be a little bit of a momentum shift. You know, we could really use a good, and you come out and you just kind of run it down their throat and go on this long time consuming drive that just more or less, you know, It's an awesome thing to behold when you're able to put that together and actually do it, right? You posed your will and you just went out there and went down the field. And you took it. And so, I mean, it was great to see. That said, to go back to your Taysom Hill comment, it's like, love Sean Payton, man, but I swear sometimes I just let it go. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to force it now. You know what I'm saying? It's like just when you're only – six plays into the game and three of them with Taysom Hill replacing Jameis Winston at quarterback and all, you've already done too much as far as I'm concerned. But
go ahead.
Like you said, it did eventually work.
Maybe the most discouraging thing about running, I am not exaggerating when I say that's the exact same play. Now, okay, exaggeration is the seven times, but was it four? Was it five? And you finally say, all right, hey, everybody, huddle up. And you look around, you got a little smile, you wink at everybody, you say, this is the one. Power right, this time pop pass. Oh, we've been waiting for that one. Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And they run the play, he goes to pass it, and the dude is double covered.
Yeah, he's covered.
And it's like, I mean, okay, that kind of defeats the whole set the play up, you know, like, oh, well, they keep paying that much attention to that run. Sooner or later, that pass is going to be open. Yep. No, they're going to shut down the run every time, and then they double cover the receiver. And I was just like, oh, my God. I literally went through my head. I said, I mean, it felt like something, you know, like a fight. You just fought all day, and you're tired, and you're sweating. Yep. And then you say, I got the secret plan. And the secret plan just fails miserably. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Or your secret plan is the guy in the locker room, and you're like, bring him out now. Or, okay, even one of them gladiator movies where you got the dude and he's missing an eye, but he's like 6'6", 380 pounds. And you're like, okay, bring him in, Sasquatch, you know, and Sasquatch comes in and, you know, he don't have his pants on. He's not ready, you know, and the dude just walks up and jumps up in there and stabs him in the neck and kills him. And you're like, oh, damn, man, that plan didn't work out the way we, you know what I'm saying? It's just not working. Just like, that's how I felt, man. It's just like, oh, damn. You know, so we ran that play over and over for nothing.
Right.
And then when we finally go run the counter, you don't get nothing off of that either. It was very discouraging. All right.
Let's talk. Well, you know what they say about Bill Belichick, you know, he takes away what you do best.
Yeah, what you do best. Don't get me started on that comment.
I know it's your favorite comment. That's why I brought it up.
Okay, did you? Because I'm serious. Yeah. So now I got to talk about it. One of my biggest pet peeves. What team doesn't try to take away what you do best? That's the dumbest comment. Yeah. But you know what? It's the anti-Jameis Winston thing. Once you build a certain resume, then all of a sudden the narrative is like, oh, when he poops, it's like smells like roses. And everybody's like, oh, did you hear Belichick's poop smells like roses? And everybody's all happy about it. You know, Jameis Winston walks out and no matter what he does, he can't win. But oh, coach takes away what you do best. You know, like every team tries to take away what you do best.
Perhaps the saying should be he's better at most at taking away what you do best.
Well,
you
know? Okay. If they set it a better way, if they say he's successful at taking what you do best away, then I'd be like, oh, okay. But they're like, oh, he tries to take away. Everybody tries to do that. Tell me he's successful and show me a percent. I got to see, oh, yeah, 73% of the time he's successful at taking away what you do best.
Yeah.
All right. I'm done with that. Let's talk a little bit about these stats here. So let's talk through three games. The Saints offense it averages 234 yards per game, and that ranks them 31st in the league. Rushing 120.3 yards per game, and that's good for 9th in the league. Passing is 113.7, that's 31st in the league. And points per game is 24.3, which is 14th in the league. So from those statistics, ranked by yardage, the one that strikes me is that, you know, the Saints are efficient. They're not getting a lot of yards, but they scoring a lot of points on our yards they do have. And that goes back to, well, you got this great new defense. I say new defense like it's new, but this defense is playing so well. Now, in defense, they're 7th in total defense, giving up 304 yards a game, 3rd versus a run at 60 yards per game, 14th against the pass at 243 yards, 4th in points allowed, 14 points per game now, and 1st in the NFL at +5 turnover ratio. Now I find that interesting. I also read someone counter that with, I've never seen a game won by the team that has more yards. So when you look at it differently, we're 4th in defense in points given up, and then 14th in offense point scored. So, you know, I kind of like that. And it's funny because maybe if Winston had, you know, 400 yards passing a game and we were ranked 2nd in offense, I would be like, oh, 2nd, you know, but oh, well, you weren't 13th in scoring. I'd still be pointing at the yards. But the point is that that's absolutely right. You don't win games whoever has the most yardage, you win by points.
Right.
But
I think more often than not, they tend to go hand in hand, I guess, is, you know, not often does the teams put up 500 yards a game and score 7 points, you know.
Right.
At least that's the perception that they go hand in hand.
Well, you know? If you also look at it, the two games that we did win, both of them were similar in the sense that the offense didn't have to do a lot.
Right.
So we scored a bunch of points, but the offense didn't have to do a lot. So you can't, how sustainable is that is the real question.
Well, you know, and to your point about when the defense gives the offense short field on a regular basis, well, you don't need to get a lot of, you're not going to get a lot of yards. You can't get a lot of yards. You're starting on a 30 yard line because you just had a turnover. Or when you got a guy like Gillikin, he's able to flip the field on you a lot of time.
You know, it took me a second. I'm like, who the hell's Gilligan? Gilligan, our punter.
The punter. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody realized what a good
job he's done.
Morstead impression he's doing right now, right? This guy's averaging 50 yards a punt. And it's like, you know, so he's able to keep you on positive field position during the game, but with his punting. And then the defense is giving you short fields and all. Well, hell, you ain't got to go far. Who cares how far you went? It's a matter of how many points you put up, right? We Absolutely. Like yards and all as fans. We want to see team. Let's be honest. Most people that we're stats whores, you know, people want to see they want your quarterback. You want him to throw 500 yards a game. You want your running back rushing for 200 yards. You know, we all like that stuff, but it's not always the best way to get the job done in the most efficient way, you know.
Yeah, and you know, lost in all this, and you brought up the punting, is special teams and how well they've played this year. The Saints, two consecutive weeks, block a punt or a kick. Our return game has been great. Yeah. At one point, they quit kicking the ball to Harris.
Right.
I mean, like, I didn't notice this until I rewatched the game and realized that they – how often, you just don't see it very often, teams kick the ball into the end zone. I mean, it's a mistake if you do. Right. They were intentionally kicking the ball in the end zone. The Saints were getting the ball at the 25, and I didn't think much of it until I realized, golly, you just don't see that often. And I realized that because I think it was the first return Harris had. He had a nice return. And they're like, Belichick's like, I'm going to take away what they do best by punting the ball in the end zone.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just great coaching.
So only Belichick.
Only he could do something like that. All right. So one more here. You told me what it is. The FPI rankings from ESPN.
Yeah. Football Power Index.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Now, it's a predictor. Hold on. I looked up the definition of what ESPN calls that. Let's see if I can find it real quick. A measure of team strength that is meant to be the best predictor of a team's performance going forward for the rest of the season. FPI represents how many points above or below average a team is. Now, these results are based on 10,000 simulations of the rest of a season. Anyway, that's how they come up with this index.
Huh. Okay. So, well, thanks.
Tell us where the Saints are.
Okay. The Saints rank number 5. At plus 3.2. Then I'll go up here. The Rams are at plus 4.9. The Chiefs are at 5.0. The Bucks are at 5.0. And the Bills are the top team at 7.2. Now, let me pull out a couple of other guys. Let's see the rest of the NFC South. The Panthers are at 1.4. And that's kind of amazing to me. What's again, the these rankings, you can't tell me there's not some bias in this because, I mean, they're 3-0. I didn't watch all their games. I think I watched their first game. Who'd they play? Oh, they played the Jets. Okay, so then they played the Jets. They played us when we were not in very good shape. And then they just beat – who they beat on Thursday night. But still, they're 3-0. You would think that they'd be rated higher unless –
Well, and somebody... then look at the Chiefs. The Chiefs are way up there. They're 1-2.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that you can't tell me if the Chiefs would have, for the last 10 years, were Detroit, that they'd be 1-2 and have a 5.0. You follow my logic? What I'm saying is that you can't tell me there's not some human input into this.
Well, it's that, and if they're running simulations, right, it depends on what's programmed in for the team. It's kind of like Madden or whatever. Like Madden, you know, in other words, they have an index for each player and team strength and all these kind of things. And so if that's not accurate, that's how you get in the Chiefs at, what did you say they were?
5.0, number 3.
Yeah, number 3, 5.0, and they 1-2 right now, and quite frankly, they don't look very good at all.
Apparently, in the simulation, they don't program Mahomes to have 4 turnovers every game.
Right.
You know, so defense. I get what you're saying, and I guess that if you want to break it down, that's kind of the human element, right? Yeah. That's the human element.
That's one of them. That's one.
Yeah, that's them saying, oh, they're really good, so give him a high grade. Let's see, where are we at here? The Falcons are at 28. I already mentioned that the Bucks are at 2. Now, upcoming games here, the Giants are 27. And where is Washington? 25.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at this, and I'm starting to realize, like, I need to look at – I think I have a decent idea of our first half schedule, but – couldn't tell you exactly, but I found out we're playing the Eagles, who aren't playing very well. I think we're also playing Miami. I mean, our schedule does not look as daunting as it looked in the preseason. I don't know. I might have to go look at that. And I don't know, man. I just feel like you get these. Okay. Something I hear people saying, I almost said it myself. These people talk about, well, when we get these injured players back, what you don't realize is by the time those injured players get back, somebody else is going to be injured. The NFL is a game of attrition. It's a game of how healthy can you be by the end of the season? So, you know, oh man, when are we going to get Armstead back? Well, actually we were talking about getting McCoy back, right? So by the time we get we didn't even get McCoy back and Armstead's injured and he's going to be out several games.
Right.
So the point is now McCoy comes back, Armstead's out. Well, hey man, we got to get Armstead back. By the time Armstead gets back, somebody else is going to be, and hopefully none of them are out for the season, but you're going to have guys. It's just the point. And this is where the whole depth thing comes up. Now I talked about depth and I'm going to bring this up real quick. I look at sometimes the NFL and it just kind of drives me thinking about it. We had Sheldon Brown and Sheldon Rankins, yeah, and Malcolm Brown on his team. And both of them were pretty high paid players. And now we got a bunch of league minimum undrafted free agents.
Yeah.
And these guys are, okay, we missing the pass rush. Don't get me wrong, but they still wrecking teams in the run game.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, why do you pay these guys so much when you can find, and I think some of these guys, like there are, and we talk about corners, left tackles, quarterbacks, obviously, but these other positions, you know, how long we went without good linebackers. Everybody says, oh, we need to get linebackers. You're just like, we'll just get some guys. They'll be, cause your linebacker's like a 9.
Yeah.
Okay. But this backup's a 7. What is the real drop off? But you're paying one guy $12 million a year and you're paying the other guy, you know, $800,000. Yeah. And at some point, this, I guess, is managing the cap and knowing who to pay $800 and who to pay the $10 million to. So
that and the Saints, you know, I think a big part of this with the defensive line, at least the interior defensive lineman, is Ryan Nielsen, right? And whoever else might be scouting, they have shown a knack to find defensive linemen. You go back to what was the nose tackle we had? I can't. Crap! A few years ago, I'm trying to think.
Man, you know, I'm not gonna be much help when it comes to remembering guys playing nose tackle a few years ago.
He was undrafted free agent, played at nose tackle.
You're not talking about Leroy Glover or somebody
No. Just 3 or 4 years ago or whatever, he left and went. I'm trying to remember where. Anyway, the point is, we've been able to find, you know, Stallworth came in and he's gone now, and then Tuttle pushed him out, and then you got guys pushing Tuttle back to the second string now, and you know, the Ringos and the Roaches and all of these guys, and even Huggins, is that he came in and played week one or whatever and played really, really well. Now he's been back on the practice squad or whatever. But I mean, we got guys just literally, you know, like the clown car. We got defensive linemen coming out like a never ending supply of these defensive linemen that they're not
superstars.
Aaron Donald or whatever coming up the middle on a pass rush and everything, but these guys are locking it down on the run, and they're doing pretty good on the pass. I mean, they're certainly not chopped liver.
Well, okay, so before
Davison,
we go,
Davison, that's who I was trying to think.
Oh, of. Tyler Davison.
Yeah, Davison.
You know what's sad is I almost said that, and you said, but he wasn't undrafted. He was like a 5th round or 6th round draft.
Undrafted.
He was a 5th or 6th. Right. He's in Atlanta right now.
Okay.
See, I should have put my knowledge and expertise on display right there, but I was like, no, that's not him. Okay, so back to the snaps. Johnson, you know, the tight end that, you know, we have Troutman, 51 snaps. Now, here's the thing. He hasn't been productive in the past game, but I'll ask you who has been. But 51 snaps. The guy is he's an all-around tight end. He can catch the ball, and I'm sure he can get open in some situations. I don't know if it's a developmental thing or what have you, but 51 snaps. Johnson, who's supposed to be our big receiving threat, and quite frankly, the at least the one catch where he had where Winston didn't throw the ball very well for a touchdown, and he adjusted to it and diving backwards and caught the ball.
Yeah,
that showed me a lot about his athleticism, and I'm just kind of amazed. I think that we'll start seeing him more when all the talk that we did earlier in the show about the offense developing and getting comfortable and confidence, we'll start seeing him more when that part of the game starts growing.
Yeah.
But right now the Saints are like running the ball and throwing it not very much. And Johnson, despite all the potential to be a good receiver, is not seeing the field a lot, 8 snaps. So I wanted to point that out. Another thing I want to point out, you have Taysom Hill, 33 snaps. Now, you know, he only played a handful of snaps at quarterback, but 33 snaps, the guy is in the game quite a bit. Yeah. Where's the other one? Kenny Stills. Callaway had 38 snaps. Kenny Stills, 29. Signed him a week ago.
Yeah.
Get him on this practice squad. Teach him the minimum, because people keep alluding to or talking about, oh, he's on the team. Do you realize how much the Saints offense has evolved and how much has changed?
Oh, yeah.
I get run certain concepts the same. But when you haven't played on the team for several years, things evolve constantly in NFL. Right. He comes in 29 snaps. And that
I was surprised by that. Yeah.
Tells you something about the other guy. So, oh, and the other thing we had talked about is, or did we already talk about it? We might have skipped right over that. Roby. We traded third rounder for him.
Yeah.
Now, let's keep in mind, before we go saying there's a third rounder, the Saints basically offloaded some cash, traded him, and gave up to Houston a higher draft pick because Houston ate a bunch of cap money.
Yeah.
So I think he was it something like $8 million?
Yeah.
And by the time the Saints got him, they gave a third rounder, but they're paying like league minimum to him. So
at least
this year. But right. Roby, who started last week, and I'm going to explain this a little bit because I don't want it to sound like he's done something wrong, but he got 2 snaps in the game. But you mentioned this. Lattimore was out injured last week, so Roby gets thrown into the fire. You're talking about, you know, they start practicing on Wednesday. I'm sure he probably came in on Tuesday, started trying to learn the playbook, and they throw the guy out there. I personally love Paulson Adebo.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take him off the field right now. I think he's playing strong. He's solid. I think he's going to be a core player for the Saints. I think Roby still needs to learn. And the Saints are like, we have no reason to get him out there and have some communication mistake. And, you know, you making it really hard on me. You over there getting pretty and brushing your hair and stuff. And I'm like trying to talk. Right. And I'm like, no, get there right there. That hair, just a little bit. Anyway,
I know I'm a head turner.
Roby, I think this has nothing to do with his ability. I think the Saints were forced to throw him in the game last week.
Yep.
And this week they're like, hey, we're good. You know, he's still the backup. He's the third corner. And they're going to just let him learn and then gradually work him into the but I still would ask the question, you know, who's he going to replace? He's not replacing Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Matter of fact, Wesley said something before the game, and I'm just never looked at. I like Chauncey. He's like, man, I think he said he would rank him as our second best defender. And I was like, oh, come on. My first reaction was like, what? And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, and then he goes and plays the game he played last week. And I'm like, the dude is an impact player.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can argue whether he's who he's behind, but Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is a great player. Anyway, my point is that Roby's also a slot corner. Who's Roby going to displace to start? Or to even get a bunch of snaps, unless they go 3 corners and then also a slot guy.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. You know, Roby early in his career with Denver, he was a slot corner. He went to the Texans and he's played on the outside and he played well, obviously. But so he comes in here and I think you hit the nail on the head. Number one, he hasn't been with the team that long. And while to a certain extent it's, hey, go out there and cover the wide receiver, and that's the same on any team when you're a cornerback, he doesn't know all the lingo, and he hasn't had the communication out there with the other players. But then the flip side of that is, you know, so you're saying, okay, normally you might say, look, he can learn all of that quick enough. Hell, he played the first game, right? First opportunity he had, he started out of necessity because you already had Adebo had to play on the other side and you had to fill in for Lattimore. But now you say, okay, look, Adebo's playing so well that let's leave him out there because you're invested in him now, right? He's a draft pick. He's on a rookie salary. And if you can leave him out there and he's playing as well as he is, and the experience he's going to get this season.
Right.
Okay. Because they're only paying Roby a little bit of money this year, like you said.
Right.
Next year, you got to make a decision, right? And so it either A, you say, hey, we ain't bringing Roby back, right? It wound up being a one-year rental. We didn't know Adebo was going to do this, but look, he's worked out and we're not going to keep this guy around. Or you go to Roby and say, hey, man, you see this kid playing over here? You ain't going to get that $12 million or whatever you're supposed to be making next year. Let's renegotiate or whatever. So sure, I'm all for it. You know, it's like Adebo's just played, so, you know, why take him out?
And you know, look, I just got finished saying that the NFL football is a game of attrition. If it's only a matter of time before one of them gets banged up a little bit, they're going to need them. So,
oh yeah,
your options right now, hell, I couldn't even really tell you our options after Roby and the two starters. So my point is that, you know, think how uncomfortable we were with the cornerback situation until it turned into what it has been. I mean, I'm even go as far as saying, golly, you know, we were worried going into, I remember a show and it turned out we didn't mean to be so negative, but it was just like worried about corner, worried about defensive tackle, worried about, you know, wide receiver. The only position that hasn't really solved our concerns is wide receiver, and Michael Thomas and Smith will be back. So yeah. Back to defense. I mean, golly, you know, at some point you're going to need Roby if it's for a few games or if it's for whatever. So the point is to have a third. Now you're talking about we have depth again. You know, before, oh, we let all these guys go. When Onyemata comes back, we have depth at defensive tackle that we didn't think we had. Cornerback, we now have depth that we thought we wouldn't have when we let Jackrabbit go. Just and you know, listen, I'll even go to the wide receivers. You get Smith and Thomas back. You now have depth at wide receiver. Now, is it all amazing depth? No, but you got Kenny Stills, you got Callaway, you got Johnson. I know he's a tight end, but the point is that you got guys that can play. You know, are they number ones? No, but when you have your number one, all of a sudden, it's funny how your number three starts getting more open than he did when he was your number one.
Right.
So, anyway, you got any final thoughts, Heath?
No, you know, I guess what I would say, so what have we seen this year so far? Really great game. Really horrible game. We kind of came in, you know, we're thinking at this point, we still don't really know what we have, right? It went too right against Green Bay. It went too wrong against Carolina. Now we've seen, you know, New England, not the best team in the world right now and everything, rookie quarterback and all, but what we saw was solid, right? And so I've seen enough now, especially defensively, that I feel, you know, sky is the limit, literally, with this defense. I mean, I think this defense has the potential to stay this good or get even better as the season goes on. Like you said, I think we're winding up now. Things are finally paying off, right? You got these defensive linemen that you've been able to hit on, these nobodies, these guys making, you know, and then you're going to get Onyemata back. You know, the potential at defensive end between all of them, Turner and Davenport and Passano and just all these guys. But then linebacker, like you said, you know, if Werner, you know, he looked pretty good, and if he's what he's advertised to be, I think Bond will get it together again. He had a bad week last week. The whole team had a bad week last week.
Yeah.
Hard to really isolate him and say, look, you know, it was all his fault, or it certainly wasn't all his fault. Then you get Alexander back. Now, he's another guy.
Hell, I forgot about Alexander. I mentioned him earlier in the show.
Right. You don't know how long you're going to have him, but you get Alexander right back. And then all of a sudden now you got where you thought cornerback was a huge problem. You got a guy like Trufant that was inactive last week.
Right. And so he played solid the week before.
Right. And played really well. We never thought we were going to be in that position, right? We thought the inactive guy was going to be Gray or somebody that you don't even – not Gray. He's a safety. What's the – Haley? Yeah. Or one of those cornerbacks that we picked up from, you know. And so – that's what I, you know, the defense is going to carry this team. I'm convinced now that this defense is good enough to play with anybody in the league, and that it wasn't just a mirage or a fluke against Green Bay, or it wasn't just a, you know, despite missing all the starters that they did, it was still the strength of the team in the Carolina game.
Yeah.
And so now we just need to see the offense. You know, we need to, man, I cannot wait until we get all five offensive linemen back and then have that seasoning and that time together for Jameis Winston, you know, to gel with the team as a unit. These guys are still learning each other as a unit and everything to play together. And that's before you even get the wide receivers and all back. So I guess that's a long way of saying is that I'm pretty damn optimistic for this team for this year. especially after what you just said. When you look at the schedule, you know, we play the Giants in Washington next. We should go into the bye week at 4-1. Like, it's hard to look at that and think that this team cannot be 4-1 going into the bye week. Further into the season, you mentioned the Eagles. We also play the Jets. We play the Dolphins. We play Atlanta twice.
I didn't realize we played the Jets.
We played the Jets. So if you're
obviously we're playing the whole AFC East.
Yeah, right. If you're already 4-0 heading into the bye week, and then you still have Philadelphia, the Jets, the Dolphins, and Atlanta twice somewhere else on your schedule, at the least, that's five more games right there. It's not a stretch to see this team already getting to that 9 to 10 wins that we were prognosticating at the beginning of the season. And I have no doubt that they'll win some of the other games, you know. So,
yes,
throw the Carolina game out. I still feel really good about what the potential of this team is this year.
So the Giants come to the Superdome. The Saints been away. There's a hurricane. Right. While I don't expect it to be, you know, when Katrina happened, I expect to be a raucous, hyped up crowd. Give me your score prediction for the Giants game.
I'm going to say 31-10.
I'll say a different number just for the sake, but that's what I have in mind. I'll say 34-9. There you go. Three field goals. We're not going to let them get in the end zone. All right. For Heath Elson-Son, this is David Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we will talk to you after the Saints whoop up on the Giants next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time. Podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. Oh, but I don't.